Hello.
Hello, Melina.
How are you?
Fine, I'm not bad. We're just waiting for Ben and Jen. Oh,
I'm here.
we're waiting
Hi,
for
Tinkle
just
Fart.
Jen.
Hey, you're not supposed to get to know my secret identity, though.
Oh, sorry. I just popped up. I had to say
Well, now people can go on
it.
yellowbellwhitepages.com and find out where I live.
Oh, does that still exist?
That's actually what our home phone number is listed under.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
No, it's not listed under Tinkle Fart.
It
My address is listed as Hot Peck. Hey, Jen.
Hey.
Hey. All right. So today we're gonna say welcome to More Fan Less Critic. It's the podcast that reviews new movies, and we don't have a proper introduction. So let me introduce everyone. I'm Allie, and my husband Michael's with me.
Hello.
And then there's my sister-in-law Jen,
Hello.
and then my brother-in-law Ben,
Hello.
and then one of my best friends, Melina.
Hi. Holy
Hey,
moly, it's a party.
I know, right? So we're here to talk about the 80s classic, Cherry 2000. And I'm going to first tell you like a little bit about some of the actors before we talk about the movie. And the main actor in the movie is a dude named David Andrews. Oh, excuse me. And the
Damn.
film claims Sam Treadwell. And on his IMDb page, it's one of those guys, he has like over 100 acting credits. And he does stuff like character arcs. So he'll be like in 14 episodes of JAG or 6 episodes of CSI. He's like one of those actors. And he's probably most known for Watchmen. He plays Detective Farragut, that TV show Watchmen. Yeah.
Yes, it was very interesting reading some of his stuff as well. I was like, holy cow, I have seen this guy before.
Right? That's what, as soon as I saw, like, I've seen him before, I just didn't know from where. And it's from everywhere.
Yeah.
If you look at the cast, everybody who has a line in this movie basically is in other stuff. It's kind of surprising how many people were fairly established actors.
Yeah.
And then people who just have like one line in the glory hole.
Right? I know. There were so many famous people in that scene. Okay, so the character that the movie's known for is Cherry 2000, and that is played by Pamela Gidley, and her IMDb page had this IMDb page had this as her fourth acting role. And even though like the movie is titled about her character, she's in maybe top 10% of the movie, maybe 10% of the movie.
Kind of like
Yeah.
the Hangover.
Yeah, like the Hangover. Yeah, the one guy Hangover. Yeah. Now the co-star and the counterpart to Tram to Sam the Sam Treadwell character is E. Johnson, and that's played by Melanie Griffith. And at one point, another character refers to her as Edith, but I'm just gonna call her Johnson. And she came to fame the following year. She was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Actress in the film Working Girl. And I was like, what? She in this movie, you would not think that next year she's gonna get a nomination for Best Actress.
But they made this movie 3 years before that came out. It just didn't get released. And
Oh.
she had already been married to Don Johnson the first time before this movie came out. She had some stuff going on. She's a daughter of a famous actress.
Yeah, she is the daughter of a famous actress, and she is the mother of a famous actress because her daughter Dakota Johnson did those like 50 Shades of Grey and Suspiria, those movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so the movie starts with credits playing over a woman's like naked silhouette and then goes to two scenes. One is a man driving home, and the other woman is a woman getting dressed in a sensuous fashion. And the couple look like man and wife, and they live in this futuristic home. And they sit down to eat dinner together when the man gets home. And it's red wine with, I wrote down, a meat and bun hamburger, no condiments.
His favorite dinner looks like a elementary school lunch because it's like a little hamburger, a little bit of fries, some green beans.
I know, it's
Yeah.
like six green beans and seven fries, and here's a tiny hamburger with no condiments. Yeah. So, well, I wrote down it doesn't matter because she takes it before he eats it. I don't know if you guys remember that.
I did.
Yeah, he goes to eat it, and she just snatches up the plate. I'm like, what? So
she's a little weird.
Yeah. Then I wrote, they start making out in the kitchen, and it's boom boom time, and they're rolling on the floor, and they're like covered in suds from the washing machine because it started to overflow, and we don't fear flooding in the future because we don't conserve water. So we don't worry about any of that. And then all of a sudden she starts to malfunction, and you learn that the woman is an android named Cherry, and she's malfunctioning. And I wrote, did the water short her out? Because that can't be.
Yes.
That's why.
Yeah, that's what they say, like, later on. Yes, that there's too much water. But I must say, I really do enjoy the special effects on showing us that she's an android. Like, there's just flashes of light to show that she's malfunctioning. And then the editing part also is interesting because she's kind of twisting her head. But at one point, they, like, show a close-up of her mouth. And I'm like, why? Why do we need a close-up of her mouth? It was very interesting. I'm like, okay, sure, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I thought, okay, you're trying to tell me she's never been wet before from, like, the rain? Or
yeah, what's the point of having a sex robot if you can't take it in the shower?
I know, like, she's never been in the shower. She's never been splashed by a mud puddle this whole time.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, fine then.
And maybe I'm an old man, but it would really kill the mood for me when the suds and when the dishwasher started acting up and there's suds and shit all over the place.
Yeah. I was like,
yeah, how much fucking damage is this going to cost to the cabinets? You know.
That's literally what I'm saying. I'm like, so they don't fear flooding? I mean, that my first thought is like, oh shit, you got to find cut the water off. You know what I'm saying? You got to do all sorts of shit. You're not supposed to be making boom boom on the kitchen floor in your suds. And if you knew that your girl can't get wet, why'd you do that?
Right.
Anyway, so he goes to this, Sam Treadwell goes to this android expert, and he says, like, she can't be rebuilt. Her insides are all messed up. But he did take a chip off of her that would make another model have her exact characteristics. So he just needs another Cherry 2000 model. That's what she is. And the android expert is then able to slowly drive through a display of different, like, sex droids. And you see, like, some in the back being used, you know, in storage. And I wrote, the writer of the movie didn't realize that women like dick too, or he would have added some male models somewhere in the building.
Well, you know what else is weird is that so there's the Bambi 14 who's like the teenager doll, and he doesn't say anything about her not being for sex, but then there's Cindy 990s just for domestic. The other model, really for Cindy 990, she's only for domestic stuff. She's not for, you know, but.
Oh, right. He didn't say that the kid android was only for domestic shit. Oh my God. Good point, Ben.
Did you notice the robots that they pass when he goes into that place? It's the robot from the Earth Stood Still and the robot from Forbidden Planet.
I did notice that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that I really enjoyed, also a couple of things, is that these androids were made in Detroit. If you did not catch any of that.
No, yes. I didn't catch that.
They said the androids were made in Detroit. And this is also the future of 2017.
Ooh, is that the futuristic
world we're in?
Okay.
We are always looking to diversify the economy in Southeast Michigan.
So. Yes. So the wave of the future in Detroit is sex bots.
Sex androids. Yes. So Sam runs into two of the most irritating coworkers in the world, and they talk him into going into a club that has human women in it. And I don't know if these are women or androids that have the really extreme body paint, like being painted white with large black dots or green with black stripes. Were those just women being painted up? Like, that's kind of fashion?
That's like future fashion. Have like a weird cadence in the way they talk.
Okay.
Do you know?
Yes.
All right, so the human women are brokering sex deals with men. That's basically what they're doing at the bar. And a woman shows Sam her sex tape and then asks to see his. And when he doesn't have one, she, like, tells him off. Because I guess sex tapes are expected in the future. And then Lawrence Fishburne comes on. He's a sex broker.
Yes.
Yay.
Yes. Yeah. No, I was just going to say, I just love that because he's also credited at the end of the movie, not as Lawrence Fishburne, but Larry Fishburne.
A lot of his early credits, he's Larry Fishburne. But I was kind of surprised he's in it. This is another one where I'm surprised he's even in this movie for this little part, because if you look at his IMDb, he had a lot of credits before. He was in Apocalypse Now, like, way before this movie. Mm-hmm. So it's not like he was just some guy looking to get... I mean, he wasn't, like, real well-known, but he wasn't just starting either, where he knew this bullshit, you know?
Yeah.
On his hustle.
And maybe, who knows, maybe he had a lot more lines that it got cut on the, you know, yeah, it was cut, left on the editing room floor, as they say. But yes, he was known, he was the glue lawyer, is what I think it is, or the, that's the club name. But
is
yeah,
that
he
what
was,
it was?
Yeah, he was the lawyer. So when you were hearing people saying, well, I need to talk to my lawyer, it was that person that was there, like, at the club that was the lawyer to negotiate the sex contract between the two adults. So, yeah.
All right.
Okay. And I'm way happier that Tinder was the future of dating versus what they showed in the movie. That was way too much 80s corporate boardroom, you know.
Yeah, that greed is good shit. Yeah, so Sam misses Cherry, and it's just, it's too much to handle the bar scene. He goes home and he sits in bed with her. I call it a corpse, okay, because she's dead. And he listens to a recording of her voice while she says, like, sexy shit to him. And he starts to reminisce about sexy time with Cherry. And he remembers that the Android expert has a line on the rare sex model, because she's a really rare model. So Sam drives a three-wheeled car to a hotel called the Glory Hole. And then it's $1.50 a night. I don't know if you saw that on the
I know.
And they offer their own robots. And all I could think of was, like, do you know how many diseases you would get from somebody else's sex robot?
You know, right? Glory Hole is 5 miles away from the end of Law and Order. Yeah, if he noticed the sign when he's driving there.
Oh, yeah, because now he's out in the Outlands, because Sam lives in the civilized cities, different cities that are civilized. This is out in the Outlands where people are just wild, like the West, just wild.
Yeah, he's traveling with a shotgun, I mean.
Yeah, come on. Now, when he gets to the desk, she's like, can I get you a sex bot? He's like, do you have a Cherry 2000? You literally hear a record, like, well, I don't know if it was a literal metaphorical record scratch, like, scratch, and everybody goes still and looks at him. Like, why? I didn't get, like, the drama.
I didn't understand that.
Yeah, what was the drama about that? I mean, yeah, she's rare, but what does that, I don't understand.
Yeah,
Cherry 2000 was about romance, and all the bots nowadays are just for fucking.
But the clerk at the hotel's, like, pissed that he even asked. She's like, no.
I didn't get that. Yeah.
And it's weird that he has, like, a footlocker full of weapons before he goes there, like, to the end of the house. They don't really do much back.
That's true.
Yeah, because isn't there like a guy like playing slot machines? Like he literally like drops something. And so my thought was that he was actually part of Lester's like club. And so he overheard it knowing that Lester was like looking for one.
Oh, okay.
Is the guy the slot machine? Is that the guy with the big jaw? I can't remember.
The guy that plays a bad guy in a million movies that Mike and I were talking
about?
Yeah,
his name is Robert Zadar. He's got cherubism, which makes his jaw all weird. I can't remember if he's the one playing the slot machine or he's just in the lobby listening.
I think, I don't know if he is the one at the slot machine, or you're right, or if he was one of the guys just standing around.
Because the other guy, Brian James, is Brian with an O. He's a bad guy in a million 80s movies. He's the guy who gets him to go out back.
His name is Stacy in the movie, but we haven't met him
yet.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
That's okay, Ben. You're fine. I mean, not really.
I'll just go now.
I'm just playing. It's all right. Okay, so let's see. So, where are we at? Okay, so yeah, he goes to his hotel room, and he can see a sign out the window that says, you know, that there's a tracker named E. Johnson, and he decides to hire this person. So he goes there, and he finds Melanie Griffith, and he says that he needs someone to go to Zone 7 and bring back a Cherry 2000. And she agrees to and this is like a dangerous mission, but she agrees as long as he agrees to go along, and he doesn't. So he leaves and he goes all macho man and he walks into this bar where he meets Stacy. Oh, you're right, man. Right. He's mocked for being from Anaheim because city boys are soft. I mean, they literally, like, the entire bar is like, ha, 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 when they find out about it. And the local guy, Stacy, has says, oh, you're looking for, like, Six Finger Jake or Jake to the Six Fingers. And he has a deaf best friend. And he says, yeah, I'll take you to go find Jake, Six Finger Jake, who's rumored to be dead, but he's really alive. Meet me out back. And that's when they jump Sam, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That guy, his best friend is played by Claude Earl Jones, who's in a million movies, but he's uncredited.
Oh, he's uncredited?
He is not credited. He's Earl from a different class, but he's not credited in the
casting.
I did not know that. So he goes back to E. Johnson and says, okay, sorry, I'll go with you. You're the only one. Now, she has this hot muscle car. And they tear off into the night, no headlights. Yes. Like, how do you get around? She's like, I drive by feel, mostly. Yeah.
So there was actually one thing when we actually met E. Johnson, and I don't know if anyone else noticed this, but they have the sound effect of her, like, wearing spurs. I'm like, I don't believe she's wearing spurs. I'm like, why is there this sound? Because she's technically, like, in her PJs because it's late at night. Yeah. Does she wear spurs to bed? Oh, but I'm assuming it's to give that like whole like cowboy aesthetic to the scene, you know, since we're supposed to be out in the wild and like she's a, you know, a tracker.
Show you how tough she is.
Yes. So I just thought it was really funny. That was just a random point.
That was not bad. So Johnson stops suddenly. She gives Sam a helmet and all of a sudden they race up to this barricade that's across the road. And you learned that Johnson is a crack shot with a pistol. She is taking out dudes left and right. I mean, at one point, she just basically puts her hand out of the sunroof and is popping guys off as she's still driving.
Your car is a total ripoff of the Road Warrior car.
I agree. And, you know, they say at one point, they said that when they were doing the movie, they were trying to go for, like, the Mad Max desert, you know, apocalypse type world aesthetic.
Right.
I mean, yeah, just add some big wheels to a Mustang and there you go.
Right. Even the Road Warrior's car is kind of like the Australian version of a Mustang. It's not an actual Mustang, but even that's kind of a ripoff.
True. So then they drive through, they get through the barrier and they tear off, yeah, they go, and they drive through this post-apocalyptic wasteland that's America, and they stop so Johnson can take a nap, and Sam listens to his cheery recordings again, and it's the sexy time, same thing over again. Then suddenly you hear explosions that are happening across this canyon that they stop at, and so Johnson next knocks Sam off a cliff with the rolling tire. I was like, wow, you took some chances that the fall was that far. And then the noise was Lester, who bullies people in Zone 7, but now he's branching out into the other zones. He's looking for chips to put into cherries because he has the cherry models, but none of the chips. So Sam and Johnson decide to drive on, and she lightly mocks him for having a relationship with the robot. And when I say relationship, I mean sexy times. And then they come upon this giant construction crane with a note from Lester saying, "Death to all trackers." And that's what Johnson is. And so Johnson and Sam drive on, and this magnetic crane, and this at one point I get confused. Comes swinging for them. It latches onto the top of the car and carries it across the river. Now, while they're suspended in the air, they're hit with like bazookas, and this car doesn't flinch, okay? Sam and Johnson start laying down major explosives, I mean, like bazooka shit, machine gun fire. They're both excellent shots.
Yeah, RPGs. I mean, it's crazy.
Yes. The crane operator's about to drop them in the river. So that.
Oh, and his death is great.
But they kind of kill him. Well, they kind of sort of kill him.
Yeah.
And they start to drop. And at one point, I was like, her stunt person must have so much money because at one point they're out of the car and walking across the hood as the car is like suspended hundreds of feet in the air. And then the crane operator lowers them into this large concrete tube, maybe on accident.
I think to me it was he was barely struggling, and that like with his last bit of energy before he dies, he just so happens to push the lever as to make him drop into this.
It's implied she knew when to kill the crane operator just at the right time, so she even lowered the lever, which seems right.
And they weren't, and she wasn't afraid. Like, she knew that's what was going to happen. Because right. She said, that's the best way across the river. Like, how did you know they right. were going to hook you up to a magnetic crane?
And so that the operator was going to get shot, and you were going to drop into the concrete tube. It was very confusing here at the King House. I mean,
if you really think about it, maybe Lester's in his right to hate E. Johnson, because how many crane operators has she killed every time she needs to cross that river?
That's yeah. funny. Maybe. So Johnson and Sam go down this giant tube, and the car is, you know, still attached to the crane, so they start to rappel down, and Sam slips because there's like water pouring down the tube. He slides into Johnson, he knocks her down. Again, the stunt woman or person, because sometimes it's a guy, must have earned all the dollars. They earned all their dollars that day. And at the bottom is this large pool of water, a raft, and a man with a gun. And then you find out Johnson knows him, and he lets them get on. And then they climb onto this raft / way station. And then you learn that the guy is Six Finger Jake, the one that people, you know, is rumored to be dead. And Sam, so listen, what's that?
There's actually there's a little goof here with them rappelling down. When he rappels down and Sam slides down and he drops the briefcase actually opens, which there's absolutely nothing in it, of course. It's just a tumbling thing. But then by the time they get to the bottom, the briefcase is all nicely shut and tight again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. As I said, the two mistakes is one, the empty suitcase, and two is fastening it back together at the bottom.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a magical suitcase.
Yes, exactly. And for some reason, at the middle of the night, Sam decides to listen to his cheery recordings again. And Six Finger Jake is talking to Johnson, and she asks him, like, what are cities like? And they have a philosophical discussion on sex bots versus real women. I don't know if you guys caught that.
Yeah.
So the next day, the three of them are attacked by Lester's gang, and Sam wakes up next to a pool. So they get attacked by the gang trying to get back to the car, and all of a sudden, Sam wakes up next to a pool, and he's now at Sky Ranch, and he sees his ex-girlfriend, who now wants to be called Ginger, and she tells Sam he was the only one found alive at the scene. Now, Ben and I talked a little bit earlier because we were testing his mic, and we both agreed that that's a nice way to change scenes, is to knock somebody the fuck out in one scene and have them wake up in a totally different place.
Yes, it's a great editing technique, of course. Yeah, that'd be awesome. One of the conversations that I thought was interesting is just that toaster ovens are the wave of the future, when he was talking to Six Finger Jake.
See that everything was made of boxes, of toaster oven boxes?
Yes, it was just all toaster ovens, and they all worked. And he's like, of course they work. And I'm like, well, then why do we have so many toaster ovens here? And he thought it was just like the bee's knees, which I thought was hysterical.
That was Six Finger Jake's way station or whatever was like made out of toaster ovens. He found
them while he was out scavenging, and that's, you know, that's like currency for him, is I guess trading toaster ovens at some point.
I know. Yeah. Isn't that like at some point you'd saturate the local market with toaster ovens?
But you're out in the wild. I don't know. Maybe it is a bargaining chip. It's just interesting. But actually, so apparently, like, the tunnel, when they're trying to go retrieve it in the morning, it's actually Hoover Dam that's in the background.
Yeah.
That they're safe showcased in. So it was interesting to see. I'm like, oh, okay, so the river must have been the Colorado River and then Hoover Dam, and then went through I don't know. I was like, my brain was trying to analyze the trajectory of, like, where he was, you know, going to where he, you know, where he was from to where he was going. But anyways.
Yes, and they said also they showed one type of like a 60, I don't have the numbers right, like a 64 Mustang before they crossed the river. While they were crossing, and it turned into like a 68 and then back to a 64 when it was being towed later. But I was like, I wouldn't have known. I don't know my cars. So Lester pulls up to the Sky Ranch with the adobe houses with his gang, and they have like a little pool there, and he sees Johnson's car is being towed by the gang, and Sam meets Lester, who is banging Sam's ex-girlfriend Ginger, which I think is like a weird coincidence. And then it cuts to nighttime and a giant barbecue at the ranch. Now, things get real weird here. So Lester tells Sam that he has a whole bunch of Cherry 2000s, but he doesn't have the chips to make them run. Lester then starts to harass this guy named Jimbo. He was found sleeping in Cherry's car, which had been abandoned. So Lester has Jimbo wear a paper bag over his head with a target on it, and then chains him to the wall, and then kills Jimbo with an arrow to the bullseye.
Well,
I was like, oh my God, that's like actual violence in this movie.
Well, they know Lester's Jimbo says he's not a tracker, but we all know he is, and Lester knows he is. So
true.
Yeah, because he had those batteries.
Yeah. Well, right. Then the whole party does the hokey pokey, and I didn't know if the hokey pokey maybe was in the free song catalog, but the whole, they are just getting the fuck down to the hokey pokey. And then Sam's ex Ginger wants Sam to stay and explains to him that he can't escape even if he wanted to, because there's like barbed wire and all this stuff. But Sam tries anyway, and suddenly Johnson's there helping him, and no one notices this despite Six Finger Jake's mule is braying like really loud. Like, you guys don't even have a mule. Nobody notices. Like, the hee-haw.
Maybe they had a dog.
So Six Finger,
it was barking when the mule came around.
All right. Yeah. The barking dogs.
I mean, Lester's gang is just interesting in itself. Like, the clothes that they're wearing, it's like resort life. And it's almost like he's in a cult because he keeps telling the, no, be good to yourself, guys. Don't worry. You're going to do great. And I'm like, he's the most positive gang leader I have, like, seen.
Right? Yeah. Six Finger leaves the camp of the positive cult leader. And now it's just Sam and Johnson at the Sky Ranch. And Sam is setting a fire. And it causes a huge explosion. I mean, his little fire made the whole camp go kaboom. And it blew up a lot of cars. And then it set off a hive of bees. And Lester's pissed. He's been stung to shit. And he's burnt up. And his stuff's burnt. His stuff's blown up. And now he's really after Sam. So Sam is now driving, despite Johnson saying no one drives your car. And he's so busy looking at her, watching her sleep, that he drives into a wall, a rock wall. Then they make out on top of the car.
Which was hot.
Oh, which was hot. Interesting, because when he went to go check to see if she was okay, he's literally copping a field as he's like, are you okay? I'm like, dude, you're feeling her up. Yes, I'm okay.
They're like, are you okay? Is your right breast okay?
No, like you said, he's talking with her. Are you okay? But his hands were like just on her boobs. they had no contact before. It seems like a weird initiation.
Right.
Exactly. And as they're making out, you hear the Cherry's voice start speaking again. Now, Sam thought he had lost the chip, and Johnson let him think that the chip was gone, but she actually had it. So he gets pissed, and they break off Boom Boom Time, which is okay because now they have to hurry and run from Lester's gang. So it's a good thing that they didn't try to keep going. So
that doesn't make any sense, though.
What?
They did not leave. Lester's gang did not leave until the morning.
Uh-huh.
They had been driving all night long. How did they catch up within 5 minutes? Literally, just enough time to have their little weird...
Out of everything in the movie, that's what bothered you? Yeah. Yeah, I get it.
Maybe they edited the part out where... Sam Treadwell made a wrong turn. He had to double back around and wasted a bunch of time.
All right. They edited that out. Yeah.
Right. So, and at what point was, like, you know, E okay with him driving the car? Because no one drives her car, I thought.
I agree. He's driving it, even though she said nobody was supposed to. And then he crashes it. So I'm like, that's why, dude.
That's why you don't drive the car. That's why you don't drive the car.
So then they do lose the bad guys. And then they get shitty with each other over having to continue on with this journey to get an android, you know, to the android graveyard to get Cherry. And they stop at this combo gas station brothel that's centered around this large mud puddle that has, like, pond aspirations. And the people at the shop hold up Sam and Johnson, and Sam and Johnson hold them up. And then They argue about what to do next. So they try to fly out of the gas station or drive. And Sam wants to drive and Johnson wants to fly. Now, Lester calls on the CB looking for Sam and Johnson, calls to the gas station brothel. And they are betrayed by the sex worker named Rhonda. Randa. And it's now a race between Lester and, you know, arriving there and Johnson getting the plane working. So they see him approaching.
What's funny is that the guy Snappy at the gas station slash brothel is played by Harry Carey Jr. Mm-hmm. And him and Six Finger Jake were in like a million westerns together from like the 50s and 40s and all this shit. So like they're two more people probably didn't really need to be in this kind of low budget-ish straight to video movie either.
Right? They're like, hey, buddy, let's give it one more shot. Yeah, like, all right. So the as they see Lester approaching, and Randa, the sex worker, shoots and kills Jake Six Fingers. In the back, right? Yes. I mean, what a that bitch. Yeah. And then Sam makes it to the plane, and he does tell Johnson that Jake's dead. And Jake's like basically like, I don't know, like a father figure to E. Johnson. And then Lester then murders Randa because she's annoying. He thought she was annoying. He literally said that. And Sam and Johnson make it to the E. Johnson make it to the graveyard building. And Lester's gang goes after them with four-wheelers that have machine guns attached to the front. And their murder motto is, life is an adventure. And that's what you mean, Melina, by the most positive.
Right.
Murder group that you can find. Life is an adventure. That's what they shout out as they go with their machine guns. Life is an adventure.
When they get there, doesn't Lester say something like, be friendly but firm or something, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it starts off when you see the crate, like in the crane, because it says death to trackers, and it says be yourself underneath. And then even at the like the table when they're all talking together, he's like saying these like affirmations and stuff. I'm like, is this a cult or a gang? Or actually, are those really, two the same
really
thing?
A murder gang cult. So Sam and Johnson break in, and they do find a Cherry 2000. And Sam inserts the disc, and 2 seconds later, they're making out. And the bad guys arrive, and all three of them take off. And thankfully, the bad guys shoot with the precision of a stormtrooper, or everybody would be dead, and the movie would be over right here. But it's not. So Cherry isn't taking the situation, seriously. I don't know, she just doesn't have the capacity. And Sam and Johnson are shooting their way out. And Lester survives the gunfight even after taking shots to the torso. What? And he still manages to climb a rope to the top of the building. And that's when we learn that Sam knows how to drive a plane.
Wouldn't this new Cherry be like even grosser than a normal sex robot? Because she's not fresh. She'd be all, her mouth be all dusty and stale.
She wasn't a plastic, like, though. Yeah, I don't know.
Probably latex.
She's been all zipped up in plastic and stuff, and yeah, I don't know about that.
So now the plane is...
brush her teeth first.
You're not wrong. Okay. So the plane's now... Sam's flying the plane, but now it's too heavy because Cherry's inside, and the plane's barely running, right? And so inside the E. Johnson offers to jump out, and Sam's like, no, don't jump out, stay in. But she jumps out anyway, and Lester's men open fire on Johnson, who has like very little cover, and the bad guys are starting to overwhelm her as Johnson starts to run out of ammunition. So Sam turns back to Johnson, and he leaves Cherry behind, and he says, quote, because she's just a robot. And Lester snags the plane with a rope, and it throws him into a statue, and that kills him. And then all of a sudden, it cuts to Cherry eating a sandwich with Sam's ex, Ginger. And Sam is piloting the plane, and he turns around completely in his chair. He doesn't need to see to fly. And starts to kiss E. Johnson. End of movie.
But when he got rid of Cherry, he lands the plane and tells her to go get him a Pepsi. And then Poppy was in the room when I was watching the end of the movie. And she said, Do you think Pepsi paid for that placement? Maybe. Doubt it. But maybe.
No, not for just the line. If there was an actual like Pepsi machine in the background, I'd give them
credit for
that. But
just the line, no.
And the graveyard was just interesting itself. But go ahead. Go back. We'll come back to that.
When he asked for a Coke, I mean, let's just be honest.
That's true.
Coke does the better.
No, I mean, where you know, randomly going to a restaurant, say, you know, I'll have a Pepsi. You ask if they, you know, they tell you they have Pepsi when you ask for a Coke. You know what I mean?
I get you. I get you.
Yeah, I mean, here in the South, like, they, you know, you don't say, oh, can I have soda? Can I have pop? You say, can I have a Coke? And then they say, what kind?
Right?
Just more popular.
Okay, so anything else we say? Do you want to say anything else about Cherry 2000 before we move on to our next movie, which we have to explain in a minute?
Do you think that her hair is red and she drives a red car because, you know, because they fall in love. And so it's like she's really his Cherry. No.
Okay, so I honestly thought the movie was, right. By looking at the cover, that the movie was going to be about her because she had cherry red hair. And the shock I felt when I was the blonde chick.
And I give major props. She held her ground. She fixed that airplane, even though he said she was a girl and couldn't do it.
Oh, I didn't remember that.
Yeah, that whole argument scene.
Damn.
And then the plane building montage. She rolled out those rubber tires and built them up with air and stuff.
No, I just thought it was just interesting because the some of the cutaway scenes that they had throughout the movie were just like completely unnecessary. Like, there's a cutaway scene of as like Lester's gang is trying to catch up to E and Sam, where it's just Ginger saying, "Do you want a sandwich?"
Right.
And I'm like, did we need to have that scene in there? Why? Why? And so my only thought is just that, like, you know, was the editing just that bad, or was there just not enough good scenes to put together so that they kind of just had to fill it with, like, well, shit, I'll just throw this in there.
Honestly, I think they're like, oh, my God, this movie's only an hour. What can we do?
Yeah.
Swear to God. Okay, so the next movie we were going to watch was going to be Robot Jocks, which I've had on this list for a long time, but I waited so long that it's no longer free to watch. So we're not going to do that now.
Da, da, da.
I know. Thanks.
Am I cut off for talking about Cherry 2000 now?
Oh, yeah. I'm so sorry.
You know, they finished making this movie in 1985, but it wasn't released until 1987, direct to VHS, because they just didn't know how to market it, so they just shelved the movie. So it was...
Well, yeah, I heard they didn't know if it was going to be like, should we market it as an action movie, as a not as a fantasy movie, as a science fiction movie? Yeah. I can see that. I can see that movie having some personality. Identity issues, some personality problems.
A little bit, yeah, and I believe it actually went to theaters in Europe, but then, straight to home video here in the U.S., and the only reason it even came out at all was because of the fact that Melanie Griffith had just, you know, was going to have this, you know, movie, Working Girl, coming out, so like, go off of her fame that's, you know, she's starring in this, you know, really kind of somewhat, you know, good movie.
Yeah.
I mean, she was nominated for
it too, and just called it like the Road Warrior Part 3, even though it's not related at all.
Well, it was like inspired by Road Warrior, just like almost everything at some point was Star Wars inspired. You know what I mean? There's a lot of, you know, they're like, oh, that made money. Let's see if we could do something similar.
Yeah. Oh, and I was going to say that before, the graveyard, I don't know if y'all noticed, was basically Las Vegas.
Yes.
Like, understand.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, the graveyard, the sex graveyard. Yep. The sex box right there.
Yeah. Because, okay, of course, where else would you find it?
I know. So, our next movie is House on Haunted Hill. It's the 1957 version, but it's 1959. I don't know why, but it's 1959. It's the one with Vincent Price. If you want to watch it on Tubi, which it's free on Tubi, it has both the original black and white, and then it has a colorized version. I prefer the black and white. I'm old school on that one. But you can either see that on Tubi or Amazon Prime or Vudu or iTunes or Apple TV. The only one it's free on is Tubi. But yeah, that's going to be our next movie because I waited so long on Robot Jocks, it's not free anymore.
Really?
So, House on Haunted Hill for next week.
$2 on DVD. I was being sarcastic. That says free on Tubi or $2 if you want to buy a DVD.
I know, right? Actually, we bought it in a Vincent Price pack.
Yeah.
$5.
Right, there you go. $9. So, plus tax, you're at about $2 per movie.
Yeah.
Well, I tell everybody, you know, we all decide where to spend our money, and I decided DVDs a long time ago, so. Yeah. All right, guys, so I'll see you next week for House on Haunted Hill.
All right.
And remember, you can contact us at morefanlesscritic@gmail.com. If you want to join us or give us movie suggestions, follow our page on Facebook or reach out to us on Twitter @lesscritic.